What's up, y'all? Welcome back to Sports Minded. I'm your host, Brittany Young. Now, let me introduce my guest. She's a Birmingham, Alabama native, former West Central Alabama Association official, former Baton Rouge Association football official, where she spent 5 seasons. And currently a member of the West Virginia Football Association and the ODAC USA South D3 Conference. Tiffany Willis, welcome to the show.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
I'm happy to have you, and I'm ready to get into today's conversation because we grew up in the same church, First Baptist Church, Fairfield. And all this time, I did not know you were such a huge sports fan. Until recent years, seeing you post about, football, women's basketball on social media. So talk to me about what got you into sports, or did you play any sports?
Yeah, so I actually played softball all throughout high school. And I was pretty decent at it, and I could have played in college, but I was more eager to go to a specific college than to go where I had scholarships. So I stopped playing and I just kind of did intramurals in college. But from that point, I started officiating while I was in college, and I started out with intramurals and I tried basketball first. And me and all my friends, we had fun, but it definitely was not my type of activity. I understand basketball, but I would like to watch it from the stands. So then I said, I can try football because I also understand football. Now, when I was in high school, I was in the marching band, so people didn't know that I was a huge sports fan, but the people in the band knew that I would stop playing my instrument to watch the game. So that was a thing. But once I started football, I did a little bit of intramurals, and then I kind of just jumped into high school and it went perfectly fine. And so I just haven't departed since. So I've done softball, I've officiated softball. I didn't have as great of a time because I played and I wanted to coach a little worse than I wanted to officiate it. So I just kind of put that one down.
So what made you get into football instead of, since you didn't want to do softball?
Yeah, so basketball was first and then football was second. And so once I started football, it wasn't one that I thought I would put down. My first season went really, really quickly. And the way they pretty much assign games are like your veterans, people who are already assigned on crews. And then if you're a first year or if you're new, you may get a game, you just may not. You may do some JV things. So I had gone to the meetings and, kind of met a few people, but because there are so few, and in some places no women, they're gonna put you out there. I just remember I went and I was like, okay, I think I can do it. I'm gonna buy me a uniform. I got it. This is good. Everything is a challenge for me. And they had given me maybe one JV game, and they were like, we're gonna put you on a Friday night. If you don't know what flag you're throwing, just don't throw it, and don't blow your whistle. We got it. And then I got out there and I was like, I know what it is. I'm gonna blow my whistle and that's gonna be what it's gonna be. So I kind of stood my ground a little bit that first night. And then from there, I haven't come off the field. I haven't come off the field at all.
Okay, so can you talk about the process of getting involved in officiating? So what was the requirements you had to do back in college?
Yeah, so I don't really remember intramurals. I just kind of remember I was at a small institution, so they needed people. I remember probably like responding to an email, but it wasn't a huge process for that. Now, once I decided on high school, that was a little. Now, football itself or any other officiating group, it's very fraternal. Like it's a fraternity, so you have to do some word of mouth things, let people know that you're interested. In some places, you can go online and find pretty good information, but in some places, you have to know somebody so you can get a little more information. And so I reached out to our secretary assignments people in the area at the time. And then they have meetings and trainings that you will show up to. And then once you do all those things, you pay your registration fees online and they have a test that you will take. Now, with officiating, most of the time when you have those tests to take, you're not alone. You're not by yourself. There are people who have help to give. And oftentimes we don't really take the test. I'm not going to say alone, but we kind of partner up to figure it out so that nobody fails and everybody have a chance to call their games. Once you do that, you're pretty much eligible to call a game. But at that point, it's based on the assignments that you get. If you were assigned to a crew, things like that, you just kind of wait your turn after you take that test.
Okay, so you've officiated, like you said, you didn't want to do softball, but basketball and football. So right now you're currently officiating what sport?
Just football.
Okay, is there a reason for that or?
So I am most likely going to be carrying football all the way out, career-wise. So with that, it becomes a little more year-round than it is just one season. And so while the season is 10 to 12 weeks, then you go into your camps, your trainings, rule studies. Then after that, at the end of the summer, you come back and you do clinics. So it's really not an off season. And if you're staying in it, if you're getting a whole lot of work, you're gonna do flag football, you're gonna do youth football, you're gonna do your high school, you're gonna do jamboree scrimmages. So it's not really an off season once you put yourself into one full sport. Now, before when I was just trying to see where the money was or what I was gonna stick by, when I tried softball, I'll give you the story, what really turned me off. Because I could have gone back another year, but what pulled me off the field in softball, I had a game on a Saturday morning, and the game lasted 6 hours, and the base pay is the base pay. Like, you don't get paid overtime, you don't get paid for going past hours, past time. You know, it's not a time sport. And so that was one of the downfalls with softball that I picked up really quickly, because you're used to playing or you're used to seeing good softball. People can pitch, people can, do strikes and outs, but then you have a team who can't do strikes or outs, and then you're out there all night. And I also had another tournament, and the tournament started probably at 8 a.m. that morning, and I don't think I landed in the bed until midnight. Now, the money was great. The body was not. So that's kind of where me and softball broke up a little bit.
Okay. So in football, you've done high school and now D3. Okay. So do you have a goal of getting to like doing D2, D1? Like, talk to me about some goals you have.
Yeah, so with football, my goal is just the highest thing I can reach. Most people will automatically assume that just means the NFL. But the Power Five is not a horrible Power Five, Power Four, whatever people want to call it. It's not a horrible place to land. It takes a lot of work. There are a lot of unspoken rules, and especially for women. And so some days I just have to figure out how to navigate some of those things. And then there are other days where I'm like, oh no, it's going great. Like, all things are perfect. I will say one of my stumbling blocks currently in trying to move up is just simply that I'm a girl and I never did play the game. And so what makes sense to me makes sense to me. But once you see a rules test and you didn't play the game, it's like a kindergartner. Like, you literally have to draw out the X's and O's. And so that's been one of my challenges, like, just within myself. I'm still moving, still getting there. But I have I have my girl moments of like, okay, I kind of actually don't understand that. Like, I don't get why this happened on a free kick or something like that. Now, to actually move up, what the process is for that, you work your season, and then they have camps and clinics and conferences and things, just like any other profession. When you do your camps and clinics, you show up your best self, like you're doing an interview. And typically they're 2 or 3 days. They do some in-class training. They'll put you on the field and allow you to do some scrimmage work. Typically it's like inner squad things, but most of the time full pads. And so you're seeing the game, you're calling it, but you're calling the game in front of coordinators, in front of assigners, in front of people who have the access to give you your next step. And then once you get a little past, like your first, like your intermediate from high school into college, which is like your D3 or NAIA, once you get past that, sometimes they just start recruiting, right? So right now I'm in ODAC USA South. That's my stepping stone to somewhere else. Somebody else already know what that stone, like stepping stone, is, but I don't know what it is. So whatever conference I get picked up in next, it's a trajectory that exists. I don't know what it is.
I'm glad you
So.
corrected me because when I introduced it, I said ODAC USA, so it's
Oh,
ODAC USA.
oh, no,
Good.
you're fine. You're
Okay,
fine.
so just I wanted to get to talking about some of the challenges you've experienced as a woman in football because you talked about where some people would assume that the goal would be the NFL, which currently we have three women officiating in the NFL. And I'm sure they've experienced a lot of challenges. So can you talk a little bit more about more challenges other than what you've already spoken of?
Yeah, so when I say the unspoken rules, you learn a lot the longer you're in and the more people you communicate with. Every situation is not the same, and everybody's experience is not the same. So I remember when I got here, there was an article and they asked me a very similar question, and I told them I don't want to be dismissive of the subject at all, but I have not had a terrible experience as a woman. Like people automatically assume the coaches may chew me out, or how do you deal with so much yelling, or how do you deal with this, or fans, or this or that. I've only had less than five incidents that would have caused me to make an abrupt, like, I don't want to do this anymore decision. Were they likely gender-based? Probably fueled by. But can I also acknowledge when I've made mistakes or when I could have handled a situation differently on the field? Probably, for sure. Some of the challenges that I faced a little earlier on, you have to pass what we call an eye test. I don't know if you ever heard of an eye test, but you need to meet the eyes. Your uniform need to meet the eyes and it needs to look good. And so, when I first started doing football, I was in process of losing weight. And my uniform was my start weight, not my end weight. And so once I put the uniform on, one of my mentors who's in the SEC, he said, "You think you got room to lose a little weight?" And I was like, I actually don't know that I have room to lose weight because I'm pretty slim for what it's worth. But what that came with is you do have to get your uniform tailored. You do have to like know all these ins and outs and make sure your shoes like make sure your pants don't touch your shoe at a certain point. Like there are some unwritten rules that they're not gonna tell you. You just gotta go off and figure it out with your own mentor. But also it's one of those things that your mentor shouldn't send you out without you knowing how to play the game yet. Some other things that I have faced when we have these camps and conferences and clinics. This may be very inappropriate, but I'm just going to say it anyway. There is an unwritten rule that you do not hang with all the women, and there is an unwritten rule that you do not have anyone in your room during that point of time, right? Has it happened? Maybe. Do I know who? Do I know how or where? No. Again, it's just an unwritten rule. And as much as I'm not in the room where decisions are made, people know when things are happening. So fraternity is what I'm gonna say. And then the other things are just simply like understandings and relationships. And some one of the big picture things that I think people see and know is like locker rooms, right? On a football field, you have your visiting team, your home team, but you don't have a women's area for any of this. So that's been one of my more external challenges. Most coaches have put me in the gym. They've put me in the baseball locker room or the women's basketball, the women's coach's office or something like that. But it doesn't really bother me. Once you have skin in the game, once you do it long enough, you come medium dressed is what I call it. You come medium dressed, and if they tell you to go to the restroom, you ought to be able to take it on, put it off, or whatever, really, really quickly. And we have a women's group. Right. So on that roster right now, it may be approximately 200 people somewhere in there. And we meet monthly and we go over some of the things that us as women, we need to talk to each other about it. Like maybe we got some questions that the guys can't really help us with because it seems normal to them because they're football guys. So we do those. So sometimes when it comes to those challenges, now I've had one challenge where a coach followed me off a field. That was a little too much for me. But I had a crew at the time that was a no BS crew, so that didn't go well for the coach. And then I've had situations where fans will just like, throw your flag, princess. And I'm okay with that. Thank you. Thank you.
But that's okay. I want to go back to you're a woman, so why wouldn't they want you to be around other women, especially if they have women support groups for, women in officiating? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. I don't get that.
It's still, and I don't mean to reinforce bias, but it's still a men's room, right? Like it's still somewhat of a men's locker room. So I'm not saying you have to go in and act as a man, but there's an idea of like all the women don't need to sit at the same table. Like it doesn't look like you're here to learn football at that point. And we do have the support groups, but in those settings, the minority of people are obviously the women. And so if we stick together and if we sit around at the same table together, what are we gaining? Not that I agree with it at all. I've had my moments where I'm going to sit next to a woman. I need to sit by a friend or something like that. But in totality, when you're looking at officials in the Big 12, when you're looking at your Big 10 folks, or SEC, you need to be sitting at the table with those folks or wherever you're trying to land.
Which
So
are mainly
that's
men.
kind of, yeah, it just kind of depends. Like I said, it
Gotcha.
could be gender-based. That just hasn't been my immediate experience around it.
I got you. The impressions of, okay, if you're around a lot of women, why are you here? You should be here to learn. So you, again, it's the boys' club. A lot of men are there. So you need to be around the men soaking up the knowledge in it. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, so one thing I wanted to come back to, because you talked about, navigating, everything. So are you currently, we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, working full time and officiating, or officiating full time?
Yeah, so I am working full time at Virginia Tech. I'm the director for academic integrity, and so that's my 8 to 5, and then I go and do football for fun and for passion.
Gotcha.
Would I love for the roles to reverse? 100%.
Okay.
Is that in the close and nearest of future? Probably not, but I do foresee it flipping at some point.
Okay, what is it going to take to get there? Because if you could, I imagine if you could make the money that you're making at your main job just in officiating, you would want to do that because it's passion and it's fun, and then you would be making good money. So, what are the steps to get to that?
Yeah. So the camps and the conferences are the main thing. So once you the main thing is really snaps. So the more snaps you work, the more people who see you, the more film you have. It's just like an athlete, right? Like you get these offers, you hear from these different schools or you hear from these different coaches or whatever the case may be. For football, it's the same way. You have to show face at those camps. Like you have to meet the people, you have to know who the supervisors are, the coordinators and things. But realistically, once you get to the college level, you start having film, you start seeing what your evaluations are. The people who are doing the evaluations at any level are Power Five. So, for instance, right now, if I get a D3 game, my evaluation actually may come from someone in the ACC. And so that's information that can be used to kind of inform what my next step will be. Some of the camps and clinics are specific to a conference, but all coordinators and all supervisor officials are at each one. And so, for instance, the camp that I go to each year is A-Team, and that's specific to the SWAC. But the coordinator of officials himself, Steve Shaw, is there. And then you have your guys from the SEC. Then you have your list of guys from Big 10, Big 12, CIAA, CIP, like whatever conference you're interested in, there is somebody represented there. And then once you're in, the next step is recruitment. Like people have to see you, people have to want you on their roster. Some conferences do have an application process, and others just pick up from the spring camps and clinics. And so that's kind of, I know it's kind of open-ended, but you go to the conference, it's almost like if you would do like a college intern day where all the students show up and move around, meet all the people, and then they hire folks at the end. It's kind of like that.
I got you. And I know in football, officials have specific titles. Like you have a referee, the line judge, the field judge. So what's your title or all of the titles you've held since you've been officiating football?
Yeah, so I'm a line of scrimmage official. So this year my primary is line judge.
Okay.
My in life primary is head line judge. We'll come back to the difference. I have also worked deep wing at field and side judge. I've not worked directly in the middle, which would be your back judge. So I'll do anything external corners, basically, line of scrimmage or back. And so at the line of scrimmage, working line judge, basically I'm responsible for the visiting team or the visiting sideline the first half, and then I'm on the home side during the second half. Head linesman, vice versa. So you work the chains one half, you don't work the chains the other half. You have different responsibilities with penalties, fouls, and kind of just where your eyes are looking. Working in downfield positions, those are mainly high school games. I don't work downfield for college at all. But those are the ones where you're looking for your big train wrecks, your 12 men on the field, you're looking for pass interference or some type of illegal blocks, things like that. So I go downfield for high school because I got young guys, young legs, can move quick, all the things. But college, line of scrimmage.
Right now, have you been officiating during summer or are things about to pick up for you now with football season? About like what does your schedule look like right now?
Yeah, so we're in preseason. Schools are about to start their scrimmages,
Okay.
but I'll give you kind of review though, because I know I have not worked games much this summer, to
Okay.
answer your question. In the spring, I worked spring games,
Okay.
and then that's when we had camps, which is
Okay.
like May, June-ish. Month of July, you get a few weeks, and then you go for your clinic, which is just kind of like, hey, welcome to your job. Make sure you got your stuff together and the season is about to start, and then you get your first few games of the season. So I just did that with, I think last week, a week before. And then now we have our schedule, which starts at the end of the month. You have a few scrimmages and then you go into your regular season. But they only schedule probably about 3 weeks at a time, 3 to 5 weeks at a time. So the games come as you go. You mess up a call, you mess up a game, you might not see a schedule after that. So that's how they do it.
Gotcha. And I know there are rules and regulations that come with being an official. Can you talk about some of the things that you can't do that a regular fan can do?
Gamble is probably the number one thing.
Yeah.
It's just one of those, like, you just have to be okay with living your life in a square in that regard. Like, if you like to gamble, you don't want to call ball. It's not synonymous at all. And I think the most of us, or the majority of us who get it right or who have fun and this is what we do, we all know that. When I was living in Louisiana, I stayed across the street from a casino that sold all you can eat crawfish. And I was fearful and wouldn't even go in there for crawfish because they have these different facial recognition systems. They have these different softwares. I mean, if you step foot in a casino and these officials want to know, they'll find out. So that's the one, that's the biggie. That's the biggie. Each season, we have to do like one full meeting session to cover, hey, y'all don't gamble at all on any sport, not basketball, not baseball, not hockey. You just can't do it. So that's the big one. I would say another one. Again, these are unspoken rules. Belligerent drunkenness and commenting on social media things and just kind of like your basic, keep your professionalism about yourself. They don't hand us a referee code of conduct. You show up in uniform, you don't be late. You study your rules, you show up to your meetings. And one thing about officiating, people don't notice going in, but the more you talk to people, what you learn is everything should be assumed mandatory. People have lost their jobs for just not going to meetings because they didn't perceive it as mandatory. But if someone sends you a Zoom link and they say, hey, y'all, we're doing this group call on Thursday night, you just may want to join that group call on Thursday night. So again, it's those unspoken things that you just kind of have to leave it in a box and just keep the professionalism about it.
And I would imagine once you get that call that you're going to be officiating this game, you can't talk about it at all, right? Like if you're calling a game because you don't, you know what I'm saying? You don't want anybody to kind of entice you to do anything. Is that an unspoken rule or is that like a rule rule?
I haven't had much run-ins with that. We don't communicate with coaches, right? Like, I'm not a referee, so that's the referee's job in any
Okay.
situation before a game, after a game, complaints, or whomever is talking, you have to go to the referee. When it comes to fans and things like that, I don't ever even consider having a conversation about the game with anyone. We report our fouls. And we do them by half. So whatever your first half is, you go in the locker room and you square that away. And then you come back after the game and the full foul report should be completed. If anybody does have questions or complaints, it should be going to your supervisor. And so again, code of conduct wise, I don't know that it's written anywhere. And it truly may be, right? Like it may be, but I've not had that run in just yet to see what happens if contact, if contacted out of the context of the game. Most of the time, once I get off the field, it is what it is until I see coach the next time. Because there are some teams that you may see two or three times in a season. You'll see them again. They'll say it, hey, I thought you missed this in that last game. Watch for it this game. You're just like, okay, coach, sure. And that's it.
Gotcha. Okay. And I know it differs from state to state, likely based on experience in the sport. But if I'm a person that wants to get into football officiating, can you talk about the pay range they can expect at the high school level, the college level, and even the pros?
Yeah.
Now,
State
I
to
know,
state.
yeah, part time and full time matters, but still, you know.
State to state is different. I will say if you're in like a Texas or if you're in one of those like true football greedy states, you're pretty good, right? Like you have your base pay, which is typically somewhere between $90 and $120 for any state. Most states are, I think, right now between one and 120. But like in states, in Texas, I want to say they get half the gate at the game because they have so many thousands of fans at their game. So the officials get paid off the gate too. That's not common for every state, but Texas is also not a state that follows NFHS. They do NCAA rules. So I don't know what that means for them in pay, but they do have a different little bracket. When I left Alabama, which would have been in 2020, I want to say they had already made 100. Louisiana had made 100. And then in Virginia, I want to say if we've not made 100, we are at the 95 to 99 mark. JV is only $10 less than what, $10 to $12 less than what your varsity will be paying. And then most of the time, when you get your youth games on Saturday, that's when you go home with fun money. Usually like $25 a game, and they are like running clock and all those things. For the D3 NAIA level, you're also still looking between 1 and 120, or maybe up to 150. I'll say up to 150 because they may include travel. Some of the D3 games are not that close, I'll be very honest. So it's sacrificial. Like right now, I have a game scheduled in North Carolina 4 hours away. For a nice little honey. So that's a thing. Once you get to Power Four, Power Five, you're in the salary range is what I'll call it. Like you're looking into your 3 to 8,000 a game. I don't want to misquote what association is the highest paid. But once you hit D2, D1, you should at least be up to 800, if that makes sense, up to 800. At the pro level, salary wise, I think they're at least 150 to 200 a year. So they're able to full time it on out. And yeah, and enjoy life and go for Sunday and chill Monday through Saturday. So, you know.
Okay, so if I'm in the South, I need to be, that's where it is, because you know football in the South is a big deal. So the Southern states, high school, college, I can make some good money. And of course, once you get to the pros, you expect to really make some good money. So,
Right.
okay.
I will say before I left the South, I was like, football is everywhere. They play football everywhere. And then I got to Virginia and I was like, oh, they kind of play football everywhere. Like it kind of a little bit, but it's not your deep South.
Yeah, that
Y'all eat
deep,
y'all football.
it's different in the deep
Yeah.
South. You know, we eat, sleep, breathe football. So,
Correct. Correct. Even the youth football is way more extreme in the South. Way more extreme.
okay. I don't know if it was the case when you were in Louisiana and now West Virginia, but there's a shortage of officials in Alabama, with especially with the AHSAA, Alabama High School Athletic Association, especially basketball, because it was a lot of people complaining about, and it's a lot of things that need to change, you know, as far as we're talking about shot clocks, replay, missed calls and stuff like that at the high school level. But is that the case for you? Have you seen that in West Virginia? Have you seen that in football? And if it's good money to be made, why do you think more people aren't getting involved in officiating?
Oh yeah, that's the case everywhere. For all sports. We need officials, right? Like we need people to do service-oriented work. And on the front end, what conversation I try to have with people is that your first 2 years are your deciding factors. And if you don't have fun, you're probably not gonna keep doing it year after year. Like you have to decide to keep coming back every year, right? Like your registration doesn't it doesn't lap, like you don't get to roll it over until the next year. You have to come back every year and try it again. So if your first 2 seasons don't look the way you want them to look, you might already have some decrease in who may come back, right? With that, the money is not there up front. So you may have all JV games, you may have all youth games on a Saturday, and on a Saturday, even though you may take home the majority of a good piece of money, you would have worked 6 games. You would have worked 6 games at that point. So now you're like, okay, I'm burnt out. And then maybe you'll have middle school game, maybe you'll have JV, and then maybe you do some flag. So at the first and second year mark, it's either you get burnt out, you realize the money is great, but I'm in overdrive, or it's just like, I'm enjoying doing this. This is a great time. The money is always going to be an issue until you make that your job, right? Like until you are passing the test on your own, until you are learning the things all by yourself, until you are leading and you are guiding people. There are some officials who they've made their ranks, right? Like they go college to college, they'll work these scrimmages and they may make $800 for that one scrimmage at I don't know, Syracuse. Syracuse scrimmage may be $800, right? That's where you make the money, but you're not gonna get that game year three. In reality, a Syracuse game for any official may not be until 17 years into their career. And so the money piece is really not there on the front end. And when you count travel, you have to also acknowledge, well, let's just go like game situations. Travel is always a thing. So when you have people who may get off work at 4:30 or 5, a football game starts at 7 p.m. You have to leave work early, and depending on how many games you've picked up, that may be early all the time, and that may not be conducive. Well, then when you get to a game, you also have to consider what is the weather delay situation and how does that look coming back? And so I think people certainly don't last for different reasons. And I'll be honest, transparently, I don't have a family. And so it's easy for me to just simply go out and move all around. We can block our calendars. We can put these schedules in the way we want them to. But if you plan to get the money, if you plan to be on that list, you have to be available. You have to be open and you have to do rule study. You have to watch film. You have to show up to these different things. And that can become just time consuming, like overly time consuming. At the high school level, and with football specifically, what makes it hard and I talked more so about people officiating and then stopping. Regarding officials who, or regarding people who just don't officiate and may have some interest, the thing is, it's just the just do it situation. I think a lot of people look to sports and they want to understand all of these things, and they want to know everything before they start. And I'll be honest with you, my best experience because my water was muddy at the beginning. Like it didn't make sense to me until year three. I officiated 2 years, and I'm not gonna lie to you. I saw a blindside block. I saw a crack back, and I didn't throw no flags for 2 years. I saw somebody get targeted head up, like just smacked, helmet in the air. I did not throw my flag. It took me 3 years to watch film, get it together, and do that. The commitment in it can be, it can be big, but it's a will and want to do it. Also, I'll just say it. Fans don't make it easy to want to do the job. Coaches, they don't always make it easy to want to do the job either. I feel like just now, generationally, I think we're doing a much better job of fixing the narrative that coaches and officials are against each other. Most times now, we're all communicating with each other. If we make a bad call, those folks know who to contact and they know how to get in touch with us. They know how to figure out what our opinion was. We got these foul reports. You can report exactly how you saw it. If coach has a problem with the call, we can figure it out now. So it's getting better in that way. But I think the perception is just that the officials are bad, and that's just it. And it can be fun. It can be a positive experience. And I don't think that's the way it's framed for people who may be interested.
I want to, because I know officiating is hard, and it has its challenges. And you talked about how there were calls you didn't make. Was it just because in the moment you missed it? Like, because I know in real time, like if I'm watching something at home and I'm like, okay, they missed that. But you also have replay. And I don't know how it is in high school in West Virginia or maybe D3, since that's NCAA, I would imagine you have the replayability. I'm not sure if it's a certain amount of time, maybe under 2 minutes, or is it per play? If you miss something, you can still get it right. But I get in that moment, things happen so fast, you're like, ah, I missed it. But with the replays, it still shouldn't be missed. Like, okay, you see it. You should be able to reverse the call and get it right. So why do you think that happens where I know in the NFL you have it happens that you had a replay and what's the ref from the ref is in the booth. The ref is the what's the it's like the lead, the person they call in, the expert they call in. Yeah. And like you said, the referee they make that final call. How are plays still missed even after you watch the replay and it's like, okay, we can reverse this thing?
All right, I don't want to get too specific.
Okay.
It hasn't happened much like that, though, right? Like when we go back and review the rules on the calls are like they're in the 90% of being correct. The ones that were missed by replay, it probably came down to the evidence not being clear and just clear enough for it to be disputable, right? Like it may be that like, yeah, actually that might have happened. It might have happened. But if the camera angle don't tell you it didn't happen, we're not gonna reverse it off of that could have happened. At the NFL level, I don't speak for those guys because they're in a whole different universe, in my opinion. When it comes to rules and when it comes to how they kind of navigate their game, it is very different from NCAA. Rule differences, how they deal with things, not the same. But on the field, I'll speak from my perspective and missing calls. It comes with a trained eye. When I first started football, I myself in learning told myself to figure out if it was right or if it was wrong. No rules associated. Can they do this or can they not? So if I saw holding, I know you're not supposed to hold this man. Like I know you need to let him go. What makes it hard sometimes to throw the flag when you don't like when you may have it without a trained eye, you really may run into an issue of not getting all your information. You're not gonna have all the information if you don't, if you not practice this thing, right? So today, if I was to throw a holding foul, I would say I have offensive holding on number 56 in the backfield, right? Like I have a lot more information to give than you can't hold him. I know you can't do that. I have a lot more information for you. We can say it happened behind the line of scrimmage. This is a 10-yard walk-off from the line of scrimmage because the play happened behind. Because I have that knowledge now, I can do that. When you one, if you're not prepared for it, or if you're not trained to it, you're gonna miss it. Targeting is one of our biggest things. And targeting is not gonna happen every game. It's not that as an official, you should go out and be like, oh my gosh, somebody's gonna target today, or oh my gosh, they're gonna do a blindside block today. But if you ain't seen it, and if you ain't looked at it, if you ain't studied your film, if you don't know the rule on it, you're gonna have a hard time getting that flag out your pocket. And then also, sometimes we do run into this issue now, me now at the college level of slowing down. In high school, you see the foul, you throw the foul. In college is much more processing because you do have to say all of those other elements. Where did this foul happen? You know, what's the time and element? All those different things. In high school, not saying you don't have to do those things, but most of those penalty mark-offs are a simple spot foul, back from the line of scrimmage or end of the run. In college, different ball game, okay? You got a whole lot of different enforcement spots that you have to keep up with. And so that was probably like early on, that was my choke on bad flags or no flags.
So the difference between college and high school as far as the replays, is it like the last 2 minutes you can replay something, or like how, explain it to me in football. I know how it is in basketball, but what is it in football?
Realistically, I don't have not worked with replay at all yet. Like I haven't had replay at all. Louisiana State Championship is the only high school experience I've had with replay. At the D3 level, like NCAA, they made their rules on the green dot, the helmet, all the things, and replay. But our D3 folks, they don't have those capabilities. And so typically both teams have to agree to something or neither team can use anything. So we've not seen much of that in our realm. So I don't keep up with that rule much until I need it.
I
We'll
got
come
you.
back to that one. We'll come back to that.
I got you. So it just sounds like, which with any profession, to be good at it, you have to watch film. Just like athletes, officials have to watch film, study, work to get better so they can get it right. I mean, y'all aren't perfect, y'all are human, but I think as we move forward, increasing technology and adding technology is gonna be the way to go to decrease human error to get these calls right. So, what advice do you have for somebody who's early in their officiating career that you wish somebody had given you, or, you know what I'm saying, helped you out a little bit more along the way? I know you talked about having a mentor, but what was something you needed a little bit more early in your career that you feel like you would want to share with somebody?
Be okay with doing the small things. I know sometimes when people get into officiating, it is because they know it's a shortage. And so there is an expectation that, oh, I'll just show up and I'll give me some games and this is a, a quick little penny to make. And that can be the case. But there are little things that each association is doing to make the people better. I don't know many associations right now who are just sitting idle and allowing bad calls to be made on purpose. There are trainings happening. People have crew calls. There's a film that comes out, like a film session that comes out every week where you watch some plays from the biggest games. You kind of get your updates on targeting, get your updates on defenseless players getting hit, that type of thing. You just have to kind of stay updated on everything. Resource wise, this is my best friend, and this is why it's right next to me. But I don't know if you can see it, but
It's
it's a
a
football board.
yes, clipboard. It's a little blurred out, but yeah, I can see the
Yeah,
good.
it's a football clipboard. And so now I'm at the point where if I have some rules troubles as a woman, I can go and literally draw some X's and O's and map it all out for myself. New officials have a hard time asking questions, as did I. You don't know what to ask, and you probably don't know where to start. If you did not play the sport, that's not a knock to what your abilities are. One thing that I try to also tell people to kind of simplify what it is that they're stepping into is when you get out for football specifically, and you are asked to work a game. Typically at the high school level, you're working somewhere between 5 and 7 people. That means that each of those people have some specific responsibility. Most first year officials just come in and they want to do all the responsibilities. Like, you got to catch everything. You got to watch all 22 players on and off and this and that. It's not that. So for instance, at the line of scrimmage, it may just be that with 5 people, I'm going to count the defense. I'm going to watch the second receiver. And if I have a large collision in zone 3, that's my zone. New officials, they don't have that context. They don't know to ask those questions. But if you get close, if you find a mentor, I would say that is where some of those little tidbits come from. In the football world, there are a whole lot of people who just hand out their phone numbers and emails, and you can call them with a question, call them with a rule, call them with whatever you got, and they'll sit up and talk to you about it all night. So the door is open for sure, for those opportunities, but also just to stick with it. The first 2 years may not be your best 2 years, but the longer you stick with it, you just get better with anything with time. And the money comes. The money comes, but it can't be the one motivator because it won't work out like that. $100 is not gonna feel good after a coach chews you out. So.
And last thing, as a woman, a black woman, officiating football, but just in general, what would you say to encourage more women, women of color specifically, to get involved with officiating? Because we know we're very underrepresented. Women are underrepresented as far as officials as a whole, but just more women of color getting involved.
Yeah, the simplest thing I'd say is, why not you? Right? Why not you? And the reason I say it is because there is such a shortage of officials, one. Secondly, shortage of women. Thirdly, shortage of black women. And so when I say, why not you? Even though they may have these pay grades set in place, like in high school, you may only make up to 120. Sure. But as a woman, if you insert yourself in that space and you become great at it or you become good at it, why not you? Why not just go ahead and go and do the thing? It can actually be fun. I think that the perception of a woman officiating is that you have to be tough, you have to be all these things, and people mistreat you so much. But once you're in those locker rooms or once you have these dialogues and these personal connections to people, it doesn't feel like that. I know a lot of women, and I'll even use myself as an example. You want to know everything, like you don't want to live or go down a blind path. But realistically, you have to be okay with just like, I just showed up here, guys. Like, this looks kind of cool. I know that sounds crazy, but that's the thing. Like, hey, they're like, are you here because of football? And you're like, yeah, actually, yeah. Do your thing and don't let anybody tell you other than. I've had some folks who will outright be like, oh, would you throw your flag for this? Would you throw your flag for that? Da, 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 da. And sometimes you just have to shut that down and get to where you need to be. I'm not gonna have that conversation. I would love to just no more, watch some film, this and that. But once again, the mentor piece is probably the biggest one because a lot of the things I learned, again, word of mouth on the phone with my mentors. And for me, as a woman, I have told myself to create mentorship in every space that I'm interested in. I know what conference I would like to be in. So I have a mentor in that conference. If that conference don't work out, I got a mentor in another conference. And I also have some NFL folks that I just hit up on the regular and I got some questions and can you help me and can you answer them? For them to be at that level, these folks respond within 5 minutes. within 5 minutes every time. And so, as a woman, you can take it as you're the only woman out there, or you can take it as, all right, you're the only woman out there. Use it. Yeah, like you are the only woman out there. And I've been on the field, and I'll be honest with you, and this is just kind of like the fun high school level. This is not college. I'll be very honest. You know what you can do at certain games. But at the high school level, I've shown up to some games and I've asked coaches for some candy before, like, coach, go in that locker room and bring me back some gummy bears or something, please. You know, it can be fun. Like, you don't have to have a hard game because you're a woman. You don't have to have the gender role concerns if you just show up and get it 90% right and trust your crew and work with your crew. That's kind of the thing.
Well, this has been very educational and informational, but I appreciate you for joining me. I'm sure everybody who's tuning in will gain a lot. And hey, if y'all want to get into officiating, the door is open.
Please do.
Okay. Well, this has been another episode of Sports Minded. I'm your host, Brittany Young. Until next time, y'all be blessed. We out of here.